This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Ready? Okay. Give me a beach.
Beach!
Give me great food.
Tacos!
Give me adventure.
Hiking!
Give me a date night.
Sunset cruise!
Give me some smiles.
Cheese!
Give me more beaches.
Beaches!
What's that spell?
San Diego!
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your trip at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Hello and welcome to Savor, a production of iHeartRadio. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum. And today we have an episode for you about macaroons.
Yes. And I'm very excited about this. But it did give me a lot of headaches because of the spelling, even though I typed in the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
Google was very adamant that I meant macaron.
Macaron.
Very adamant.
I had the same issue even when I put the word in quotey marks. It was like, but really, are you talking about macaron?
Yes. I was like, nope.
Nope.
But that being said, one, see that episode that we did on them.
Mm-hmm.
But two, their stories are very related.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. It was a headache for me. But yes. I shall ask you the question, though I think I know the answer. Lauren, was there any reason this was on your mind?
Yes. As we are recording this, Passover, the Jewish holiday Passover is nearly upon us and mere hours away from starting. And so I was trying to think of a thematic episode, and we had just done an episode about fish, so I was like, maybe gefilte fish is another day, but what about macaroons? Because I certainly grew up with every Passover Seder dessert may have included other things, but certainly included a paperboard can of Manischewitz coconut macaroons. Like, I can smell that sentence. Like, that, mm-hmm. it's a very distinct and nostalgic memory for me. And as I think it is for probably a lot of American Jewish humans. So, yep. What's up with that? Why that thing? That's weird.
Yeah, I didn't know. I didn't know about the connection with Passover. Because I think I told this story on our macaron episode. I actually really prefer macaroons.
Really?
I love coconut. I love coconut. It is one of my, I believe, I've joked about this before, I believe it is the last remaining topic in my top 10 favorite foods we haven't done.
I've been avoiding it. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it's a huge topic.
Yeah.
I've been avoiding it too. but it's one of my very favorite foods. I love it. And I have a lot of friends who don't like coconut because of the texture. It's almost always texture that they bring up.
I get that.
But as a kid, I didn't have coconut very often. So it was a very special to me. It is associated with spring because my mom would make those. She'd make like coconut cupcakes that had like the coconut was supposed to be the grass.
The grass. Yeah.
So it had like a special nostalgic place in my heart too, even though there wasn't like a religious thing around it or anything. It was just, it was pretty rare in my life. And so it became something that I loved. And when I had it, like when my dad would make ambrosia.
Oh, right.
Which I've talked about this too. Mm-hmm. He would get a fresh coconut and he would give me like the coconut milk and he would give me like slices of the fresh coconut. And it just felt so special and it was not a common occurrence. So yeah, I loved, love to love macaroons. And that's not to say, like, I didn't have macaron either, but I feel like almond flavor was much more present in my life than coconut. Yeah.
Sure.
So I'm excited to be talking about this.
We will have to do that coconut episode.
Yes. I think the problem is that might have to be a two-parter just because it has so many, like, the coconut shell has this whole history and the milk and
the oil and the whole, there's just a lot of situations there. I think that there's a couple different things going on that, right.
Yes. Yes. It's,
this is why I've been avoiding it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm like, it's too much. It's too much and I don't want to think about it. I want to do something easy.
And nothing ever is. It's always a lie, Lauren. Mm-hmm. But we definitely will do. We will do coconut. I have to complete my list.
Okay.
But for today.
Yes.
Not that. You can, see our episode on macaron, marzipan, churros, gnocchi, mac and cheese, surprisingly enough.
Yeah, which is quite a list of related episodes.
It is. There were more that I had on here, and I was like, I'm just going to confuse people at this point. So this is a good sampling. But yes, I guess that brings us to our question.
Yeah.
Macaroons. What are they?
Well, a macaroon is a type of cookie, a small sweetened baked good, traditionally made without wheat flour. It gets its structure and chew from egg whites, sugar, and ground or shredded culinary nuts like almonds or dried coconut. Macaroons may be further flavored with stuff like vanilla or orange zest or mix-ins like chopped dried fruit or cocoa powder or chocolate chips. Or after they're baked, they might be dipped in chocolate or made with an indentation and then given like a fruit compote jam type filling. Yeah. And they can range, like really range, from hyper sweet and dense and chewy to light and airy and also chewy, depending on the ingredients and baking method and whether they're fresh or industrially produced. They're served room temperature, often for dessert along with coffee or tea or as a snack, often surrounding holidays. They're a flourless cookie from before gluten-free was a buzzword. With all of the potential pitfalls of gluten-free cookies. Like, the range, y'all. It is hard to ascribe a single feeling to, like, what it's like to eat macaroons because they do range so wildly. But they do share this, like, indulgent, nutty sweetness and creaminess. You know when you're on a beach and you're in dappled shade? And a warm little circle of sun breaks through on your skin. It's like eating that.
Yeah. Oh. They're very refreshing, which is odd to me because they have a thickness to them.
Mm-hmm.
But there's something about them that's really bright.
Yeah.
And refreshing.
That good nutty, especially the coconut kind, that good nutty flavor. Yeah. So nice.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I rewrote this section like three times, you guys, because I couldn't decide how scientifically to break down the concept of macaroons. But what I decided is that macaroons exist on an axis. One variable is how you treat your egg whites. And the other variable is what your other main ingredient is, all right? So if you whip your egg whites, you're going to have a more delicate cookie. And if you don't, you're going to have something denser. And then you've got your like nuts versus coconut situation. All right, so this is your axis. Your most delicate version of a macaroon is going to be whipped egg whites mixed with fine ground nuts. This will make for like a melty, chewy confection, not unlike a French-style macaron. They're just typically served singly, not in a sandwich, in the macaroon sense. You achieve this texture by beating those egg whites to a stiff foam to provide lift and structure to the batter, and then gently fold in your other ingredients. That being said, you can totally fold shredded coconut into a stiff egg white foam. Just, you know, like as Annie mentioned, like dried coconut, it has a texture. It's always going to be chewy and dense unto itself. So that's going to create like a less delicate, chunkier kind of cookie. Yeah. For something more cake-like or like traditional wheat flour cookie-like, you just don't whip the egg whites, which means the egg is acting as a binder. That'll make ground nut type macaroons heftier, and coconut macaroons almost like a candy cluster kind of situation. Those coconut types that are denser often call for sweetened condensed milk or sweetened condensed coconut milk. And you can make this type thumbprint style with an indentation in the middle of each cookie to be filled with jam or whatever. When any type of these cookies are made fresh, you're going to get these lovely toasty nut flavors on the outside of the cookie from the nuts or the coconut browning in the oven. So good. So nice. Also, small home baking tip for the whipped egg kind. Add a pinch of salt while you're whipping your egg whites. It's going to help. A, it's going to help the proteins in the egg whites unfold, and B, it's going to help them stabilize when they reform into peaks. So a little pinch of salt. Yeah.
Always.
Mm-hmm. flavorings do tend to fall along the nut versus coconut line. The ground nut types being more delicate in general can show off more delicate flavors like citrus zest or orange flower water or rose water or cardamom. They might be topped with a whole nut as a kind of a decoration and or fun contrast in texture. Coconut is a little bit more aggressive of a flavor. And again, shreds of it do have a lot of chew. So coconut types can go a little bit more ham. Pork pun not intended. So that's where you're going to get your like chunky mix-ins and kind of like sillier flavors like pina colada or mocha or rocky road, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And it is the dense coconut type that are mass-produced because they can stand up to being packaged and shipped. And those mass-produced ones tend to be very sweet and kind of a little bit more like flat in flavor, to be honest. That's fun. I don't know. in the U.S., this type in particular is especially associated with the holiday Passover for a couple reasons that we're going to get into in the history. But like very basically, observing this holiday includes not eating grain products for the week that it lasts. And also, this like one food manufacturing brand made a super successful campaign of marketing these grain-free cookies in the mid-century. So in a lot of like especially middle-class Eastern European descended households here in the States, that particular brand, Manischewitz, is this classic, nostalgic, arguably beloved Passover tradition. Mm-hmm. And I have to shout out, this is so separate, but I have to shout out this article that I read on The Verge about Microsoft Copilot.
Okay.
For the phrase arguably beloved, because it was talking about Clippy. It was talking about Clippy being arguably beloved. And that phrase just really stuck with me. I was like, arguably beloved. God, I like aspire to that.
Yeah. That's a good, you know, in your obituary, arguably beloved. Yeah.
But also it's so,
about it, but.
So perfect for Clippy and so perfect for these particular type of macaroons.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Clippy macaroons.
Yeah. Outside of the U.S. and in like Middle Eastern descended households here, I understand that the ground nut types are the most common types of macaroons, and are also eaten during other Jewish holidays like Purim. But yeah, y'all write in. Let us know. Also, before we move on, fun fact that I couldn't fit in anywhere else. I was reminded as I was doing my Googling, but in the food industry, dried shredded coconut is often referred to as desiccated coconut, which is great because it makes me think of mummies.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh. You've opened up a whole thought process. Oh, no.
Sorry. And or you're welcome.
No, this is a good thing. It's not good now. I've got to table it for later, but...
Okay, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Like a coconut mummy could join our team of on the dunker.
Oh, yes. Yes. The dunker. We need to do that. I've been itching for like a time to act and be creative.
Yeah.
So we should.
Oh, we also just need to do another food fairy tale episode.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Right. Okay, well, in the meantime,
ostensibly a food show. Yeah.
Ostensibly a food show. What about the nutrition?
Oh, it really depends. You know, generally speaking, sugar is a treat. Treats are nice. These usually have a decent bit of protein in them from the nut content, you know. They can be calorically dense with fats and sugar. Watch your portion sizes. Again, treats are nice.
They are indeed. I must say, I feel like the macaroons I've had in my life are pretty comparatively filling to other similar treats, maybe. Mm-hmm. Something else in their category. But
yeah,
that could
yeah.
just be me.
Those dense ones are... quite dense. And so, right. I feel like having like one, you're kind of like, you know, I'm good.
Yeah. It's like halfway in. You're like, wow.
You're like, this
there's
is
still another
endeavor.
Half to go. Not in a bad way, but in I'm actually kind of full mm-hmm. way. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I guess we don't have any numbers for you.
We don't. I tried. So I was sure that Manischewitz was going to brag about how many heckin' macaroons they sell every year. And I read a lot of interviews with Manischewitz, like brand humans. And yeah, they weren't telling. They just weren't telling.
Interesting. Well, I think we can safely say they're doing well.
yes.
Manischewitz with this product, doing well.
Yes. I'm just now realizing that I didn't look up world records, so maybe we'll have an update for you at some point.
Oh, a macaroon update. I like that. Okay. Well, the history... is a fun, if not convoluted, one.
It is. And we are going to get into that. But first, we're going to take a quick break for a word from our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
This is it. your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
And okay, so as I said, a lot of the history of the macaroon does get mixed up and or tied together with macarons and pasta. So this is one of those episodes where it's almost like it's the caterpillar and then we'll birth the butterfly. We're going to have to start with something else, but then we'll get to
macaroon. Yeah. It's all going to come together, we promise.
Yes, I promise. So stick with me for a second. according to many sources, to get to the history of the macaroon, we have to go back to the 800 CE when Arab troops from Africa arrived in Sicily. They introduced this region of Italy to many new foods that we've talked about before, like pistachios, lemons, and rice. That's just to name a few. They also introduced a whole wealth of desserts that incorporated nuts, including dough-wrapped almond paste treats. And these sweets themselves have a long history of being eaten at Persian celebrations for centuries. So we've talked about those, too. All of this was going on. In Sicily and other parts of Europe with contact with Muslim culture like parts of Spain, these desserts were adapted based on taste, methods, and available ingredients. In the simplest explanation, this is where historians believe we got things like marzipan. Again, you can see that episode for more information. But very briefly, a lot of sources also assert that the macaron was invented at a France monastery in 791 CE. However, others say that they were probably invented in Italy and that they were popular there by the 8th and 9th century. These early iterations primarily called for almond paste and egg whites. This was also another thing where countries like to fight over who came up with something first. But yes.
If you had them and you liked them, you probably put them, you probably did a thing like this. It just makes sense to me. I'm like, yeah.
It does, yeah.
Absolutely.
But anyway, another piece of this puzzle is the history of pasta in Sicily. Surprised me, but records from the 1100 CE indicate that many viewed Sicily as an important center for pasta. Their pasta was exported not only throughout Europe, but along trade routes to many cultures. At the time, pastas could really encompass a whole range of things. They could be fried, they could be baked, they could be boiled, they could be sweet or savory. Savory cheese pastas were popular, as were a sweet almond paste variety that people could enjoy during Lent when cheese and meat were off the table. Many of these pastas had a cheese version and a generally sweet non-cheese version. Oh, so on board. somewhere, sometime in all of this, we get the ancestor of modern words like macaroni, macaron, and macaroon. The exact origins aren't clear, but historians think that it referenced two separate but related things, one a sweet gnocchi and the other something closer to marzipan.
Yeah. One theory goes that all of these words root from a specifically Venetian term for a fine paste, being macarone. Interestingly, we also get the English word pasta from the Latin term pasta, literally meaning paste or dough. So.
Yes. Yes. Okay. So if we focus on the sweet branch of this word and related words, by the 1500s, these almond paste sweets had made their way throughout Italy, Spain, France, and England. Beginning in at least the mid-1550s, we see the word macaron popping up in the classic French work Gargantua and Pantagruel. Yes, clearly referring to a dessert. Not too long later, the first instances in the written record of macaroon started showing up in English sources. And this was something that happened to a lot of French words that were adopted into the English language, adding an extra O to French words that end in en. I had a really fun time looking at other examples like balloon, but yes. I guess it was a thing.
Cool. Yeah.
Yes. So by the 17th century, the distinction between savory pasta and almond-based cookie had been solidified. However, we still had macaron and macaroon on the sweet-based side, but in the early days, it was mainly a difference of spelling, not of taste or ingredients. It wasn't until the 19th century that we started to see a differentiation. And it had to do with a lot of things, but one of the main drivers was the popularity of exotic imported coconut in America at the time. Coconut found its way into all kinds of things, custards, pies, cakes, and yes, ambrosia.
Mm-hmm.
And as part of this, we start to get the first recipes for coconut macaroons appearing in Jewish cookbooks. Because, yeah, treats like this were popular in the Jewish community because they didn't contain flour, making them a good option for things like Passover.
Mm-hmm. Also, don't necessarily have to have dairy in them, so good for serving at the end of a meal that contains meat.
Yes. For instance, the 1871 cookbook, The Jewish Cookery Book by Esther Levi, included a recipe for macaroons that swapped out the typical almond paste with shredded coconut. However, Italian Jewish people had already been making almond-based macaroons for quite a while. Other Jewish communities in Europe started making them too and experimenting with ingredients and preparations. Potato starch was a popular choice from what I read.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, for American Jewish people at this time, coconut was often out of reach. In the 1880s, that started to change when the U.S. and the British invented technology that could shred and dry coconut so that it could be shipped in large quantities. Companies, of course, leapt at the chance of capitalizing and commercializing this product, including marketing towards Eastern European Jews arriving in the U.S. around this time. And coconut, even though it was more affordable and readily available in shredded form in the U.S., still held on to that symbol of success for those that had seen it in cookbooks and hadn't been able to afford it. Now they could. So it was, it's still, even though it was more available,
it was still a little bit aspirational. Yeah, sure.
Exactly.
It still felt fancy. Yeah, there was this whole situation that this one American business dude got into with coconuts in the 1890s. He like accepted, he was a flour miller, and he accepted a shipment of coconuts in payment for flour. And so he just had all these coconuts. It basically led to shredded coconut being more available in the United States. yeah, we really do have to do that coconut episode that we've been avoiding.
I love this. We should just have like Lauren's short summaries of something. This one business dude got into a coconut situation. That's all. That's all you get.
That's all you need to know. Yeah, that's the basics. Yeah. Here we are.
That's it. Yeah, that's the basics. Okay. yes. So within a couple of decades, recipes for the coconut variety of macaroons made their way into many American cookbooks. This type of macaroon indeed became a popular item during Passover for Jewish people. Jewish-owned stores started marketing and selling coconut macaroons for Passover in the U.S. like in the 1910s. In the early days, it was almost half the price of the almond counterpart, too, so people would get that, get the coconut one. By the 1930s, U.S. manufacturers of matzah started selling coconut and almond macaroons.
Yeah, and you can see our matzah episode for more about that. I think Straits was the first macaroon seller, but Menashevitz picked it up pretty quickly as well.
Right. But it took a minute for the commercial store-bought variety to catch on in America, though, because at the time, macaroons were largely baked at home.
Sure.
Yes. This changed during World War II when Manischewitz, a manufacturer of commercial macaroons, really invested in advertising, calling for their macaroons to be shipped to Jewish soldiers overseas, primarily almond macaroons, since wartime made getting coconut difficult. But this was a very, very successful campaign. It was so successful that within a decade, they shifted, in a lot of people's minds, macaroons did, from something you bake at home to something you buy in a store.
Mm-hmm. This was the era when metal tins were introduced, by the way.
Right. From what I read, there is both a very fond nostalgia for the canned variety, but also a resurgence in baking them yourself. The article that I was reading this in was from the 90s.
Huh, yeah.
So listeners, write in, let us know. I recently had a younger person call the 90s historical, so I'm wrestling with that, but please.
Wowzers. Cool. That made me feel very old. Thank you, Annie.
You're welcome. I have to pass it on. I have to share this.
Like the ring. Yeah, yeah. Exactly. No, I get it. I get it. I would say that definitely applies to today still. I just found out doing this reading that Manischewitz changed their packaging from those cylindrical paperboard canisters to plastic, like, resealable bags in 2023. And I'm a little shook. I'm a little bit shook by this. I don't know how I feel.
Okay. Well, we'll give you some space and grace.
Okay, thank you.
To process your emotions. And then we can come back and revisit. Yeah.
Yeah, it makes me a little bit itchy thinking about not a canister of macaroons, but you know, and this was apparently a conversation that they had. I do also want to point out that that article that you called out from the 90s, where you were reading about this very situation, was an article in the New York Times, and the headline on it was the fifth question at Passover: have a macaroon?
Yeah.
Which I think is accurate. I think that that's an accurate portrayal of the facts.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I love this. Do you have a favorite type, Lauren? Do you have a favorite?
Oh, just plain coconut. Just plain classic
coconut. No chocolate
dip. No. Mm-hmm. No.
Okay. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to offend you.
Look, I want everyone to be happy with their own choices, but for me, the classic is this manufactured, incredibly dense, just plain coconut macaroon.
Okay,
I'm willing to entertain the concept of other types, but
it's very gracious.
And I certainly love, like, almond flour cookies. Like, that's one of my go-tos.
Right.
I love making almond flour stuff. Like, it's I love almonds. It's mm-hmm. great.
Yes.
But, you know, I don't know. This is what I grew up with.
Yeah.
It's a nostalgic
And I
factor.
Do think, like, oh, yeah. A lot of things I read, very nostalgic. I think for me, like, when I think of a macaroon, I think of coconut. I don't mm-hmm. think of almond. I don't think of chocolate dipped. I think of what you're thinking, which is, again, is very funny to me. Because we grew up very differently. I'm glad we did this episode. I didn't know that there, I thought macaroon was that.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man. I would, I... I loved reading different recipes for them, and especially from a lot of Middle Eastern Jewish households, the different types of almond preparations, or other nuts, or branching out into other nuts and incorporating pecans or pistachios, and getting some of those kind of classic flavorings like orange flower water or rose water involved. I really want to make a version like that now. So.
Ooh.
Yeah,
I bet that's delicious. And yes, listeners, please let us know if you have any of these, any recipes or any experience with this. But I think that's what we have to say for now about macaroons. We'll obviously do a revisit.
Yeah. Yes, we do already have some listener mail prepared for you. But first, we've got one more quick break for a word from our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit Pronamel.com.
Me. Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this. I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter. That's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black. Directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R. Under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
And we're back with
listener mail. Yeah.
I always think of spring. I think of spring when I think of coconut-based desserts.
Okay. Yeah, sure.
Even though, as I've said before on this show, Almond Joy is one of my candies I must get at Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
Not a sponsor, but does show my love.
I do. I do love an Almond Joy. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Well, so many of you listeners have written in about Mountain Dew. And that's amazing. And we have two letters to read about Mountain Dew today. I'm so happy about this. Bart wrote, "Greetings again from Ireland. I think you must be spying on me because your timing on the Mountain Dew episode is nothing short of spooky. I like to drink exotic, sugar-free soft drinks as a treat on my walk home on the days I work in the office rather than from home, and it seems there is some kind of bottleneck or policy by whoever imports these things to our little island that there shall only ever be one. First, I fell in love with the lime-flavored Pepsi Max. Then it vanished. But zero sugar, Dr. Pepper appeared in its place. So I drank that for a while, and I have to say, I loved it. Then it vanished, and the icon of Scottish soft drinks appeared instead. Sugar-free Earn Brew? Then a few weeks ago, it vanished and I had nothing exotic for a while until this week when what should appear but an unnaturally colored sugar-free drink from America, Zero Sugar Mountain Dew. Given its color, I was dubious, but I'll try just about anything once. On the whole, I like it, but it has an odd threshold effect. The first half of the bottle is delicious, but the tartness of the citrus seems to build up, and by the end of the 500 milliliter bottle, I naturally feel sated, and I have no desire for more. A handy feature. I have no doubt it will soon vanish too, to be replaced by something else new and exciting. But until then, I'll be enjoying my little bottle of Mountain Dew three times a week at about 5 p.m. all the way over here in Ireland. I also wanted to say how much I loved the recent introspective episode for your big anniversary. It was great to hear the voices behind the scenes, so us listeners can really appreciate how super the producers really are. You might like to know that I can't hear about fermented foods without hearing an echoey bacteria poop in my head. And once or twice, I've said it out loud to some puzzled looks from friends and colleagues. It could have been embarrassing, but I just used it as an opportunity to plug the show. Oh, thanks. Honestly, same.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. I think we should come back and talk about this, but we forgot to talk about, we used to do video. Savor used to do video, and there's some fun fermentation facts in there. I meant to mention it in our anniversary special, but I totally forgot.
Oh, right. Yeah. Because you said that you had gone back and watched some of the videos that we used to do.
I get kind of nostalgic for some of them just because we met so many cool people and we got to do cool things, cool things. And we had a good team. So the footage looks amazing.
Absolutely.
Definitely want to come back and talk about that. But Mountain Dew, I love this. I love that you're trying these new things that appear in your local store. And that Mountain Dew, as someone who's never had it, I believe deeply it is a drink like halfway in, you're like, I'm good.
Yeah. You're like, this is delightful and I'm done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's nothing to do with it's bad or something. I don't like it anymore. It's more of just like, this was good. This was enough.
I feel that way about most sodas, to be honest. Yeah. I'm about halfway through a glass and I'm kind of like, well, it's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's about enough for me. Yeah.
Yeah. That makes sense. That makes sense. But I'm glad you're having a nice, it sounds like a nice time.
Yeah. Good
on
walk.
Your walks.
Yeah. Good with weird soda. Absolutely. That I'm so glad and or sorry, Ireland.
yes.
That we're sending you that. Oh, society. We've really done a thing here. Okay. Jesse wrote, I kept waiting to hear you mention Be More Chill in the Mountain Dew episode. And when it wrapped up, I came to the realization that you two might not have actually seen this epic 90s nostalgia, nerdy, absolutely ludicrous musical. Be More Chill revolves around a kid who, in order to no longer be bullied, buys a squip from a dealer at the Payless Shoes, which is a computer implant that guarantees to make the user a cool kid. The squip is activated by drinking a green Mountain Dew. Mayhem ensues, and the second act revolves around trying to figure out how to deactivate the squip before it gains world domination. Spoilers, the key all along is that Red Mountain Dew turns it off. But Red Mountain Dew in this universe was discontinued a decade prior. Luckily, the one non-cool, still a nerd kid just happens to have a code red lying around, and Michael saves the day. It is awful and wonderful and absolutely guilty pleasure. And the concession stand at the theater has their specialty cocktails at the beginning of the show as regular Mountain Dew, and during intermission is code red Mountain Dew. Just had to share in case you ever get the opportunity to see it. Some regional theaters do still perform it.
Yes. I want to see this badly.
Right? No, I've never heard of that, and it sounds amazing.
Oh my gosh, it is so good. I love that it's like green, go, Mountain Dew turns it on.
Mm-hmm.
Code red, emergency red,
running
turn it
stop.
Off.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. This like is... the key, it was all there.
Yeah.
Also just like 90s nerd stuff around like, things like this is just really funny and bad. So.
Yeah. And local theater is one of my very favorite things. I'm pretty deeply involved in local Atlanta theater. And so this seems just aces all around.
Oh, my. A Payless Shoes shows up. A dealer at Payless Shoes. This is excellent. I must see it.
Also, squip is just a really good word.
Squip is really good. I enjoy that there's an alternate universe here.
Yeah, yeah. But this is
where,
right.
Yeah. Red Mountain Dew got discontinued. there's a lot to love about this. There's a lot.
There truly is.
Yeah, so thanks for putting that on our radar. and thanks to both of these listeners for writing in.
Mm-hmm.
If you would like to write in, you can. Our email is hello@saverpod.com.
Oh, we're also on social media. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram @SaverPod, and we do hope to hear from you. Saver is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Thanks, as always, to our super producers, Dylan Fagan and Andrew Howard. They really are super. Thanks to you for listening, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Discover Puerto Rico.
Puerto Rico is home to a thriving culinary scene based on products and traditions from the native Taino, African, and Spanish peoples that have influenced it.
When you go, there are a host of restaurants, bars, breweries, distilleries, farms, and coffee houses to dig into, from five-star experiences to local favorites.
No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.